Welcome to episode one of the Enter the Crucible Reborn. My name is Matthew. I'm one of your co-hosts, and today I'm joined by...
I'm Dan. I play Grimkin and Kator. I don't really have any other qualifications or reasons for being.
All right. My name is Brandon Andrews, and I am currently playing Trollbloods, and I also have very few qualifications.
In bed, I'm Clint. I play Merc. Not very well, but I do play them.
Well, we are back from a long hiatus. A few things have changed since we posted our last episode. I checked in September of 2017.
So it's not Mark 1 anymore.
So it's not Mark 1 anymore.
Yeah.
The Florida meta has become known as lovable people in the community, and I figure it was time to resurrect a long dead podcast. I'm already regretting this decision.
I do hear we have a good reputation.
Who says we're lovable?
I think you're lovable.
You guys don't go to as many conventions as I do. We're not lovable at all. anyway, I've got whiskey.
I think we're all drinking right now, so this is going to be great.
Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. I've literally been drinking since 5:30 this morning when I was at the airport in Chicago.
Nice.
Awesome. So we decided that Oblivion was probably a great jumping off point to basically restart the cast. One of the things that we wanted to do was basically go over a quick overview of some of the factions that we felt were more positively impacted by the changes. I have assembled these crack minds, these champions of War Machine thought, these excellent individuals of pure unbridled joy to talk about some of these factions.
When are they showing up?
You're ruining it. You're ruining everything.
Sounds like.
So one of the things I wanted, before we move into that particular subject, though, let's talk about some of the things that we've been doing in our meta, some of the things that we've been doing, you know, stepping out into the greater meta a little bit. One of the things we want to do is we want to give a congratulations to one of our players in our meta, Rian Nopke. He's going to love butchering his name on a podcast. Kanapiku.
Apparently he's hopping on in a minute, so
okay.
You get to hear the real voice.
The real voice of the champion that is Rian Kanipiku.
I don't want to talk about this because Rian beat me in the finals of GigaCon, and it was basically just all cheating.
Well, while we're waiting for Cheater McCheaterface, can we talk about how I almost beat you after giving away two turtles?
You should tell us the story of that pretty awesome game that we had. Yeah, actually.
Yeah. So
I love how Mayhew's claim to fame is that he almost won a game.
That game had some ups and downs. You know what I mean? Like, I saw you play a really good game against the Sorsha 2 player one time.
Oh, God.
It was close.
I'm out, guys. See you guys.
Anyway. I dropped Kolgrima. He dropped Morgul 2. And obviously he had Zal prepared. And everybody's staring at Zal when you're in list construction. And Mayu's like, watch out for Zal. And then he just plays Morgul 2 triple battle engine. Obviously because Scorn have the dumbest battle engines. And Kolgrima is going to kill like one battle engine a turn if the entire army pitches in to do it, right?
Right.
Well, look who decides to show up whenever they want.
Yeah, I mean, fuck me, right?
Whoa. Children, listen to this podcast.
Literal children.
Literal.
That's not the way you should refer to the Atlanta meta, okay? They have jobs.
So, joining late to the podcast is Rian Nopke, decent rep player, and he's here to tell us about how allegedly beat me in the finals of GigaCon.
I mean, it's pretty easy. Just roll better and have you roll worse. Pretty easy game.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's true that it happened. I need to see some video evidence.
So what did you drop and how many tridents?
Zero tridents into you. I had to use the tridents to carry me to victory on the other games.
Turns out trolls are so obtuse that standard meta answers don't work on them.
To be fair, the only reason I didn't have my tridents is because Tashika drove off with my list, which was good fun. So got to hard swap to shadows for that one.
And my lovely
pre-nerf
wife drove off with models.
Pre-nerf shadows.
So, yeah, what was it like?
This was shadows when the infiltrators could activate when they respawned. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, actually, I had reinforcements, infiltrators, so a really neat ability that could come off the side of the board and replace all the infiltrators that were killed earlier.
Pretty good.
Truly the golden age of the Shadows theme force.
He won the mind game of who's going to ambush first. I ambushed my pygmy scouts, and I was like, look, Rion, you should ambush that huge squad of infiltrators because there's four pygmy scouts. And Rion was like, no. And then I started to get behind with the, because we were playing a 50-point game, basically, because we had so much ambush. And I got behind in the attrition, and I was like, all right, the bears are going in. They will take a charge, but I'll put bears on the other side. So, like, one side will win. And then, like, the Spears of Skyra and the Narn. Sure.
Yeah, I started moving the Spears and Narn over that side to handle the bears that came in on that side. And I figured just the other side would just be handled by the ambushing infiltrator squad.
And he was right. So then I was like,
did you know that was the last time you were going to ambush?
I did not know. They went out fittingly killing bears, so...
They won
rest in peace, Shadows.
They won you an invite to Her Majesty's Jousting Tournament Warfare Weekend.
Yes, so that was pretty cool. Carried on the back of infiltrators.
So, like, I was like, I can probably stay in attrition if I just go to the left flank and put the spray template down on these infiltrators that are shaped like a spray template.
Hey, you would have only gotten, like, eight of them with one spray. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like you needed, like, a seven with dark power or anything to kill them.
So I was like, this feels good, but then on the right flank, the Winter Troll, for the second turn in a row, decided he was not going to kill a Mage Hunter Strike Force member.
Dude, that guy was the hero. He survived the drifting blast damage from, like, two raiders, and then the Winter Troll just missed him three turns in a row. He was a hero. He was my MVP.
And of course, Colgrim is in the middle of the table. She's gummed up with a Phoenix. You respond on my feet turn. You're affected by my feet, and you put Gareth in a somewhat...
Yeah, as soon as I repoed back that way, I was like, fuck, I might have just lost it because I repoed somewhere on the board where Colgrima exists.
And then, other than Mayu, you were going to be my second person I ever assassination, so I set it up. You had your feet going, so I had to block the harpy shots in case she randomly gets knocked down. I had to kill Iris 3 in case she shoots my fury off. So I set everything up, and I went for it, and my 67%er missed the first attack, and then missed the second attack, and then, you know, Colgrima dies.
Yeah, you had the bomber was just out of range. I'd moved one spear back to shield guard one bomb, but you're out of range anyways. And then you killed the blast damage from killed blast damage you're going to trigger onto Gareth with the Arcanist that he could hit.
Yep, that was just misplay action. So anyway, obviously, well played to you, and it's your first official major tournament victory. Your first invite to Her Majesty's Jousting Tournament Warfare Weekend.
I shall be sure to wear my proper gorget and have my lance ready.
Mayhu, are you going to be his, like, trumpet flag bearer guy?
Sure. I'll need my heraldry.
Yeah.
Heraldry banner, Mayhu.
Your heraldry is just anger and disappointment.
It's actually just a salt shaker.
And a manatee.
And a manatee.
So anyway, so that was good, and I think that all of us can agree, maybe not even vocally, but in our minds, that it was long deserved, and that there was just a matter of time before you took home one.
Well, I appreciate it. It was... You completely schooled me the day before, so...
That's true. That there was called the learning game, where in Champions, which I ended up winning via sweet dice rolls. But anyway, the Champions Day, I did absolutely take you to the slaughterhouse playing Colgrima.
Yeah, and then that was like...
my first time playing her that day, really, but more or less. But that's, like you said, glad that was the one that didn't matter, because we got to learn a whole lot in that game, and then we moved on. So before you joined, Mayu was going to tell us about his favorite game at GigaCon. Of course, four of us went to GigaCon, so we were just going to do like a quick rundown of each game. Mayu chose his game against me because he loves me secretly, not so secretly, wants to marry me, but has a wife. So go ahead, Mayu.
I believe in polygamy.
Does your wife, though?
Oh, well, that's a conversation. Toshiko
was already talking about trading up on the car ride back, so...
To be fair, like...
She likes me.
She
probably... at Ryan's wedding, her and I, like, we kind of did some sensual dancing. I don't know if you remember. And she was like, you're the most fun friend that Mayu has, and at least three times the man.
Both of those statements check out.
Yeah, all that seems true.
Makes sense to me.
I'm still surprised she married me.
You're doing all right, buddy.
So, the game with Brandon, some context to this is I made a Triplet Battle Engine Morgul 2 wins list at 5 o'clock in the morning the day before Masters, or the day of Masters qualifiers. Basically, I made the list as this is something I need to drop in if somebody has a hard answer for Zaltu. I ended up dropping it the most times in all the matchups I played. And actually, it carried me to a Masters win by getting extremely lucky twice and got me to the semifinals against Brandon. I didn't realize that even with Brandon telling me to my face that with Hunter's Mark, bears can threaten 16 inches off the board edge. I'm like, cool. And then proceed to plan around 14 inches off the board edge. It was also that scenario with the two big circles on the hugging the sides of the board.
It was a really good ambush scenario. It was anarchy.
So like on one turn, I accidentally like leave the Supreme Guardian with souls on it, like 3.5 inches away from the turtle contesting the zone that could have just shut down the Hunter's Mark, and bears killed turtles reasonably enough. I got into that game on a few things. The first one was two units of fire eaters and ambushing pygmies could not kill an Archidon. That was fun. I feed it to blind exactly 4 infantry models to try and get a zone. Brandon was up on me by 4 control points every turn, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then eventually it started like as he was losing models, we were both losing models, but at a certain point the game kind of turned where I could start scoring points and not suffer too much retaliation from what was coming after me, because all the bears died, all the fire eaters died, basically everything that really did work in that list died. And on a critical turn, I was able to clear out a zone with Morgul to keep the score going into my favor. But I forgot to cast the Brute's Animus, and Colgrima sprayed me to death. I think you crit stationed me on the first spray, like right off the bat.
Yeah.
But I did not have Rion luck at that time.
You took the bullet for me, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, and also, like, another thing is, when I was thinking back on it, I don't think it would have been as simple as, even though it certainly would have helped, it would not have been as simple as just cast the no stationary spell on myself, because you were killing my one transfer target with the sprays as well, and yes. You also had your bomber with Isle of Sight right behind it.
Correct. I still had my scenario, or I still had my objective, so I did Isle of Sight it. The goofy things in that game are, you rolled atrociously on that right flank, and then I ambush you with the pygmies to mark target. I have 6 fire eaters available. I feel like there was like a winter troll spray there also. I got the Archidon in the back arc with the pygmies, who rolled really well, and they're in a pretty good position. Or I think they were just aiming and mark targeting. Anyway, they rolled pretty well, did some good damage to the Archidon. And I get it to like 4 health with like the third fire eater, and I'm like 3 fire eaters and a winter troll. Sorry, Mayu, I'm about to score this zone. And all of them with, like, nobody can all of a sudden kill that guy. And then that gets replicated on your turn again with just horrible dice. So the game's pretty dumb, pretty hilariously dumb at this point. And then, like, I commit my whole army to killing each turtle. I'm, like, moving everything. Like, Colgrima's coming over, bombers helping, like, everybody. When I clear the turtles, I have, like, 2 bears left. And then the Supreme Guardian's in the middle of the table. And I'm, like, watch this. And I'm, like, charging him with, like, stone guys and stuff, and then like I get him to like half health, and I'm like, all right, this bear is going to charge out of melee with the Brute, and the Brute's like, how about one hit, get wrecked.
Well, the Brute caused like minimal damage, but the defensive strike killed the bear. Yeah, you were like, oh, I guess that's a thing that exists.
That's
like,
right.
Yes.
I was like, I got away, and then you were like, hard, and I was like, oh, don't do that. And then the Supreme Guardian's like staring down Colgrima, but because my objective is alive, I have this like weird position. I broke the rules of the game. You could have got me DQ'd because I used 3 proxy items at the same time. I had 2 measuring sticks, and I found there was one singular spot with like a half inch on either side of her, with like a hair of her base into the kill box, that she could be to not die to Morgul and not die to Supreme Guardian. and from there I set my trap.
Look, I don't DQ people on the proxy thing because I'm not a dick.
Well, I say it when I'm doing it. I'm like, whoa, I'm doing this, my bad. And almost every player's like, I don't care. But I'm like, nah, I'm still going to pick them up because, like, it's relevant. You know, like, I don't know, two measuring sticks and one proxy base is not the end of the world. But, like, you know, every now and then you get a little hung up with them and you start doing a bunch.
The whole reason that rule exists is the people that were doing, like, I'm planning out my whole entire turn for 20 minutes and not actually playing the game. If somebody goes, I don't think anybody has ever complained about, like, the extra measuring widget or proxy base.
I'm in a tournament. It's still a rule. So
I do every time. I call a judge every time.
Every time.
Well, that sounds like something you would definitely do, Clint.
Yep.
So, you know, Daniel, what was your favorite game at GigaCon?
Oh, boy. I went 2-3, so I'd say it was definitely one of the ones I won. after round 3, I ran out of scorn opponents to run over, and I had to play against good factions, and I lost. So,
evidently, Gary 2 shits on scorn, we have determined.
He's really good at it. Yes, I was playing Rhett, but it turns out that Rhett is a faction where if you make a mistake, it's really hard to come back from, which is why I don't play Rhett anymore. So I had a good time at GigaCon. I think maybe the most noteworthy game was the first one, which I actually lost. But I thought I played a good game, and I actually walked by a scenario win the turn before I got assassinated. But I was also winning on attrition. But I got assassinated because Gary 2 was on the same table as Zal 2.
Do you recall which scenario that was?
I think it was in round 1.
I think that was the 3-flag round.
It was bunker.
Yeah, it was bunkers.
Or that, bunkers, I think is what it's called.
You can get so focused on attrition that you can literally forget, oh, I can just win this turn, I guess.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I'll run my 3 solos and score 5 points this round.
Yeah. I just had to kill his objective, which I had a trident sitting in front of it. So that was, like, pretty doable. And then, like, touch a flag with my caster instead of doing whatever it was I was doing with him, trying to hide behind the trident or the AFG. So, yeah, long story short, I don't play Rhett anymore, and I'm a much happier...
You're a Grumpkin.
I am a Grumpkin.
Grumpkins.
Yeah, I switched to a faction where you can make mistakes, and sometimes you just don't.
You just time stutter out of any mistake you make.
That's true. Not when I lock the target with my sweet Strakov 2 list.
Yeah. Lock the clock.
I can also cause mental trauma to Mehu by playing Clockatrices against him, so it's an added benefit.
It's a really nutso model, but, you know, there's fine answers, especially in Scorn, I would think, right? I mean, you just play like a Resheth Gun thing into it. I don't know. I don't want to get ahead of myself because I'm not sure that.
I might be oversimplifying it, but I'm pretty sure you shoot the Clockatrice.
With your trident?
Yeah, just play a trident and you can shoot a Clockatrice. It's like skeet shooting.
What are tridents?
They're turtles that don't hit hard in melee.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually really proud of that. That actually is kind of correct.
That's super correct. They have more shots, but less melee.
Usually.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I don't know, turtles usually roll 4 shots every time. I actually thought it was on their card that they auto roll 4. I was like, oh, is it D3 plus 1? Or D3 plus 3? Is that what it is?
No.
So,
it does feel like that.
So to get through the GigaCon thing, obviously I had a good time against both of you. And Rion beat me in the finals because he cheats. But I played against, in the semifinals, I played against, or excuse me, in the second round, rather, in the quarterfinals, I played against a guy named Eric Cohn. And he was playing Harbinger. And you guys know, obviously, I haven't been playing. I'm not into the whole real specific meta stuff. Like, I'm playing for fun on Wednesdays and stuff. But, like, obviously, Harbinger has been a terror forever, especially since the changes. And Awe makes playing Hordes into her really, really hard, and Martyrdom is really tough, and her clock. So to beat Harbinger, you have to watch your clock the whole game. So I guess my story is basically, Eric played a really good game. He would tell you that. He had a really good time. I had a good time. My thing is, like, the concept of beating Harbinger, and I'm going to make some real hot, bold statements here, that it doesn't even matter what your list is. It just matters that you follow the concept of trying to make her play wide, and just being able to, like, put multiple casualties into the army where you can force status effects and things like that onto the champions and kind of ignore them or kill them a ton of times. So I have stationary. I have my feet slow the game down. It's a little harder to use on her, but it does. He had double min Idrians. But my big thing with that and my takeaway was just sometimes I walk away from a game and I'm like, man, because it always happens because that's War Machine. You always get better. And I was like, wow, that was – I played wide. I adapted to that game. I was that – I think Daniel saw this. I got down to almost 17 minutes, and then I picked my pace up really hard, and I stopped swinging with the Raiders. I stopped moving my Pygmies. I was just like, that zone's never going to stop because there's only a bunch of idiots with pole arms over there. I'm just not going to fight those anymore. So for me, like that game, bringing him near the end and then slowly beating the game out of him and killing the Indictors, whatever they are, like turn after turn and stuff, with my Raiders that I played with too low a pass, isn't bad. But that was just a sweet game, man. I still think back on it, and I'm like, that was one of the ones where I feel like, wow, I'm still decent at War Machine. I just got to keep playing it, you know? And you just grow as a player.
Well, before we leave the subject of GigaCon, like I can't emphasize enough how awesome of an event that is.
Dude, yeah.
That place
is great, man.
Man, I was talking to John Galvin, and I'm pretty sure he's actually just going to put sleeping pods in as a new addition to the shop so people don't actually ever have to leave there. Because they've got food, they'll have showers. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, but they've also got Yu-Gi-Oh! Players, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Players are no... So, like, that place has, like, a full-service kitchen that I'm pretty sure Galvin basically... Probably shouldn't be saying this, but anyway, I think he got his job, like, he became the GM or whatever of that store based on the fact that he got that kitchen running that way, I'm pretty sure, kind of the way I heard it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Galvin's a really great guy. All of the Atlanta people are fun. That store is awesome. It's not a real bad drive for us. It's about 7 hours. I mean, I can't say enough good stuff about GigaCon. I really can't. It's close to a hotel, a couple decent restaurants. The Giant Chicken.
Like Applebee's.
Yeah. Like that Applebee's we went to. Fantastic.
Yeah, did you see the Giant Chicken, the Giant KFC Chicken that blows fire?
I don't know what you guys were expecting out of Applebee's.
We weren't expecting anything out of Applebee's.
And we were still disappointed.
Yeah.
And
we're still disappointed. All right.
We wanted food. Also, that's what we went to Applebee's.
Daniel seriously ate 4 meals.
Daniel 2 entrees.
I got the salmon, and she told me it was wild. I was like, is it?
I'm pretty sure that salmon was grown in the pot, in like the puddle out and back.
Yeah, the dumpster. It's farmed directly out back.
The drive back changed my life, and I'm a new man. I thought I was going to die in the back seat of that.
You learned your butt can take a lot more pounding than normal.
Whoa. I mean, yeah, something like that.
So there was a time.
I don't think we should elaborate on that at all.
I think there was a time while I was driving, I was like seeing dragons and shit in the foliage. I'm like, this isn't good. And then I drove for another hour.
Yeah. That's the story of how we almost died on the highway back from Atlanta.
Well, that entire weekend was all about me almost dying. Like, the drive there, that was awesome with the tree, like, destroying my windshield. Ugh. And then on the way back, oh yeah, it even got better. On the way back, an SUV hit one of those big construction, like, orange barrels into the middle of I-10 right in front of my car. So spent about an hour wedging it out from beneath my car. So it was great. It's fantastic.
What time did you get home that day?
I mean, I just stayed the night over in Jacksonville with my buddy, and I just left the next day.
Jacksonville's got good fried chicken. Anyway.
Yeah, because Rian was the jerk that delayed our car actually leaving. Because we were all like, well, you know, as soon as, like, everybody in this car loses, we'll just get on the road and we won't get home. We won't get back that late.
Then dipshit's like, I'm going to go undefeated. Watch this.
Yeah, yeah. By that metric, I was the most valuable member of our car because I had lost and was out of the tournament the day before. So I was ready to go.
You're the most valuable member of this conversation.
Nice.
100%.
I'll take that.
All right, move us on, Nick.
All right, let's get to these faction overviews. So for the general rules on the faction overviews is a couple of us has made some lists or have some ideas on lists. We're not going to list out lists. We're not going to list the lists. But what we're going to do is we're basically going to look at initial impressions of these four factions that we kind of identified as. If you play one of these four factions, you should probably be very excited about what Oblivion did to your factions. So the first one we're going to start off with is Signar, and I believe that, Brandon, you have a few things to say about that.
Yeah, I think, like, Signar blossomed. I don't think Signar was, like, unplayable like people think, but it was definitely in, like, the bottom rungs. of the factions, which, as I always say, is inches between the top and the bottom. But anyway, I'm overly positive about stuff. But anyway, Signar is really good, right? Obviously, we start with Constance Blaze because that was the best caster before this, and she got even better. So Constance Blaze can be played out of Heavy Metal or Fires in the Dark, Flames in the Dark, People in the Dark, Girls in the Dark. What's it called? Flames in the Dark?
Flames in the Darkness.
I prepared for this. The thing about Constance Blaze...
Girls in the Dark part?
It's my new band. The thing about Connie is, like, she needs model count to a degree, and I don't know how true it is anymore, because obviously I don't have a ton of Connie, but the old one got absolutely wrecked if you didn't have, like, 30 models on the table when you feated. I think the Gallant changes make her one of the safer casters in the game, even though a lot of people tend to run them on Jakes. But for me, I think since you can play it in Heavy Metal, and you can play it in Flames of the Dark, we'll start with Heavy Metal. You've got access to Sword Knights, you've got access to Precursor Knights, meaning you have model count. I would run double Men Precursor Knights, maybe one max. One of the big changes is going to be when they add those little two-point weapon attachment guys, the Marwyn Priests, because that's going to increase your Precursor squad, your big one, if you take like one big one, Hold Fortune or whatever. That's going to increase that squad to 15 models, so your Vengeance is going to go off more. The unit's safer once the feat gets ticking up. It would be the unit that would shield wall and try to live through the feat turn, because you want to like identify what's going to die and what's going to feat. And then, of course, the dumbest thing of all time, collecting corpses from a swarm infantry army with P-Alexia. And then when you're in Heavy Metal, you have access to things like Thorn, basically, is really the only thing, and Marwyn Archon. But I think that the big opening with Signar is just the fact that like they got their melee back, right? Like you can play Striker 2 out of Heavy Metal, and it can be a really solid list. You can play Connie in one of those two lists and be really competitive in melee. And then you have Striker 3, Siege 2. And all of those lists can become competitive based off those casters. And then the big one, of course, Haley 3, still exists, is still really absurd, and now has access to Awe, or whatever they're calling it now in the Morrowind model. And she can play a unique brand of War Machine now that isn't just Gravediggers, that isn't reliant off of building clouds and stuff. And I think that she is probably, I don't know, man, I'll go with one of the deepest casters in the game at this point. I'll say that.
I think like one of the things that excites me about Signar specifically was that my impression, and I'm not a huge Signar player, obviously, but my impression was that the way that Signar battle groups are generally formed was kind of like counterintuitive to how you would get free cards in the old themes. So like you would want like you can't just like spam cheap heavies in Kador, in Signar.
Right.
So like you want to have like these, I'm trying to describe it, like these options, the battle group, basically, like if you're not just spamming lights to a certain extent, like Kara Sloan used to do, or will still do. So like, because like Stormclads and Centurions are all like high cost valuable heavies, and it was kind of like really hard to like build around those when you're trying to also reach those artificial caps. So it seems like, and this is just an impression I have, Signar can actually like be a little more mutable with their battle groups and still build fairly competitive lists with the rest of whatever that theme has available to them. I think that's like the biggest takeaway I took from the Signar changes. The fact that Flames and Heavy Metal is out, but like I actually really like the change to Sons of the Tempest, because the whole point of Sons of the Tempest was that you could take bigger battle groups and you didn't have to rely on your rather fragile infantry. So like that's why they gave you 4 free solos. It wasn't to get to the 4 free solos necessarily, it was you didn't have to get to the 4 free solos, but because of how gamer psychology work, everybody wanted to get to the 4 free solos. So now new Heavy Metal is like, these are your gun majors are now basically supports for your battle group lists, basically, essentially.
They have like access to really good solos too, for the purpose of standing in the back flag. And yeah, like when I'm playing Trolls right now, I'm like standing back flag with like a Fel Caller. And my whole like reasoning for that is like he's got okay armor and boxes and maybe won't die to like a random gun. But like with Signar, you're like standing back there with like Kane Zero or like random gun mage with a sniper rifle, like stuff like that that's contributing to the game. Or like you, and when I'm playing in Signar or playing them, I've played them a few times recently too, you will like just win a flank and like all of a sudden Kane's like taking a center flag on, not center, but one of the right central flags on hell is it bunker, and you just get this like, I don't know, it feels like Mark II Signar to me, and I don't think that it was a lot of changes. I've still thought Signar was playable, So, like, for me, it wasn't, like, coming in being like, holy hell, this unplayable thing has become playable. But I just feel like they opened so much more up than anybody else. I am still struggling to build Storm Division because I think maybe I'm excited about Precursor Knights. They're, like, one of my favorite models. I've been playing them all of Mark III while the rest of you slept on them. But I don't know. The army just feels open. Like I said, Haley 3 is terrifying. And when you ground your list with that Warcaster, and you guys know me, I want to play a powerful list that I feel very strong about, and then I'll play whatever. I'll play Morton Nebra. I'll play whatever off list I feel like. It doesn't scare me. But Haley 3 is like having your shoes firmly planted on the earth with your ground list and then doing whatever you want after that.
So I have
those Storm Striders are still fantastic models. Like, they threat a really long ways. Electro Leap still gets around pretty much every defensive tech in the
Yeah.
That dude, thing is just going to be pumping at least POW 15 shots anywhere it wants. And dude, Electro Leap
still really good.
Yeah.
Jacob really likes Jake's too. He's just, I don't know, he took a liking to her from the start. It's always been the thing he wanted to build lists around. So we have like a list that we built for him that he plays it a lot, and he fine tunes it and stuff. A couple Centurions that hold zones, and you have like Zero Cane and some other small guns like Fireflies and stuff, and you force the enemy to come to you. And he played Nick the other night, and I think if he didn't drop, he had to just keep one more focus on his caster, and he would have died to a assassination. But he wiped Nick's Tharn army off the table. It was not a funny game. And there was a point where Nick really converged on one flank with a bunch of Tharn, and the Firefly came in, and Ragman was around, and he POW 14'd Electro Leap on his feet turn, all of those models off the board. Just go, leave. You don't get to be here anymore. Like no healing, no nothing.
No rapid healing. It's like, they tough. That's cool. It's about to die immediately afterwards.
And from a defensive perspective, her feet's really cool like that, and now you have access to a few infantry units and the mechanic units to score those zones. So when you're posted up in two zones with Centurions, you're not just sitting around, you're actually scoring them, so your enemy does have to come. It's not like the like E. Haley list where they had like no units back mid Mark 2-ish or 3-ish.
I've had this weird thought on Haley 3 Storm Division. I don't know if there's something that's actually there, but like Storm Division actually has a lot of natively force barrier models. And I was trying to play around with that a little bit. I haven't really come together with
end the Signar talk on that, but you're right. I think that Storm Lances with her probably always were fine, but you can articulate your battle group and take some better models. You get your free models without like ceding to the full just mass of Stormblades or whatever for 60 points. Mm-hmm. So you can really create a good list out of it. And then, like you're saying, you've got these Stormblades, which went down a point. You don't have to care about them. They just, like, people are like, you can't deliver the Stormblades. And I'm like, I don't know, go stand behind terrain in a circle and wait till something shows up and go be power. Like, I don't need much more than that. Like, that's fine. I play infantry for that reason. That's what they are.
They're nice and cheap now, too. Like, 9 points is pretty reasonable for that unit, I think.
So, Signar's in a great place.
I mean, they still get access to that sweet Archon as well.
Mm. That boy is thick. Does anybody have any statements on not thinking Signar is good right now? Because I think they're pretty dope.
No. I would just say that I think I saw like some like a lot of poo-pooing of the like point reductions, but I think both of their Colossals are actually quite sweet now at their new point ranges as well.
Those Colossals felt like the last foothold for Privateer to be like, these are the ones we're worried about, and now they've changed them. And the Hurricane is banana fest. He's a banana tree.
Has anybody actually read those? That the Hurricane recently? Like, I have.
I've been looking at it, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Like,
that model is so sweet. Good.
It's got an arc node.
It's got a lot. It can also turn off flying high and then not shoot the bird because it's got electric. But anyway.
It's fine. It just goes up and punches the bird to death because that bird's not going to kill it anytime soon.
The bird's
soon.
Allergic to melee. I'll give that bird 3 turns. Get it done, bird.
A cockatrice will kill Storm Raptor real quick.
Oh, I ain't messing with that. I ain't messing with that cockatrice. I meant, you know what I meant.
Lots of clock. All right, let's move on to trolls. Brandon, I heard you had some experience with trolls recently.
Oh, man, you're going to make me start again.
Well, you're the only one who knows about trolls here.
I don't actually have like a cool, exciting thing with other than right at the end of this meta shift, I started to believe that Magic was good. And I don't think I'm the only person.
Magic
3, the one that puts up the stone aura. He lets you play really, really wide. You do play a stone with him. He's super, super weird because he's actually synergistic with stone. Like, he has a throwing weapon, so you want plus one strength and other reasons. But the stone is still, like, central to the list. I made a list near the end of this meta cycle, and then I kind of added some different models to it after the changes, like when Sunstag went down 2 points, which is a lot of boxes for 9 points. But it was just, like, Band of Heroes with, like, a couple, another Creel stone with the regular other. What's that? No, I don't have anything with the Dunia arc. That's actually a really good point. So anyway, this army is like a couple lights. They all just give him a relevant animus, like Storm Troll, Impaler, Pyre Troll. All just ways for him to be like good at melee or generate Electro Leap. That way he can do whatever he wants, like hang out with his battle group. And then just like the army ranges wide with like Fen Blades and Horthal and stuff. But anyway, your statement there is actually the thing. You can't make a true reading of trolls, which I've enjoyed immensely. You guys know I have. I sold my troll army, and I had everything. I had all the dumbest BS, dude. I had, like, all the pygmies. I had, like, silly Doran hats for my pygmies. I had all kinds of just stupid crap. I had multiple sluggers. I had blitzers. I had all the dumb crap. Because I bought trolls when I was like, this game's fun. I'm not a power gamer. You know, like, I was like, I need... But I sold my whole troll army and rebought trolls brand new from my local store and from Miniature Market because I was like so excited about them and I couldn't understand why I sold them, which is why I probably shouldn't sell armies. But the whole army is entirely based on what happens with the Dunian Archon, because the Dunian Archon can be free in every single one of their because it's a troll blood and it's a medium-based model. So that changes everything. If it's a single... remove a damage roll every turn, okay. If it's martyrdom, okay. Like, there's nothing it can do that's bad. It's an 8-point model. Yeah, that, let's just leave it at that. That you can't truly grade trolls until we see the Dunian Archon. But yeah, I was on Magic 3. I think they're all cool. I played Nick yesterday with Gunbjorn. I actually played Nick 3 times in a row with Gunbjorn and beat him every time. Sucka! Including against Iona, which was luck.
Well, she's Nick dead on arrival now that with the loss of Phantasm, so we'll never see her again.
I was all sprays. My Gunbjorn list is literally every single model that's sprays. But yeah, it's like Mountain Kings and stuff.
Is Nick just the heel for this podcast, or we just every time...
He plays Iona and him, Circle. Just gonna... That automatically makes it the heel.
Anyone who knows Nick knows that he should be talked down upon.
Okay. See, like, ask him about his bird first.
I'm just glad we're, you know... We've got that out there.
He was in the bathroom of the hotel we stayed at for GigaCon in the middle of the morning, and he left his phone in playing 90s all-female R&B. And I went, are you going to take your phone with you? And he's like, oh, no, bro. I'll leave it in there so you can listen to it. And I'm like, why? I don't want to listen to it. So there I am listening to, like, Naughty by Nature or whatever. He walks out of the shower. He's wearing, like, a sports material, like, jersey material, like, paintball shirt or something. And it has a giant all-color picture of, like, a cockatoo or, like, a bird on it. And he goes, hey, bro, ask me about my bird. And then for, like, the rest of the week, he kept doing that. And that's Nick. And then we're moving on. Somebody else tell me something cool about trolls, please, God.
Trolls is a faction where I don't play them, obviously. I only play good factions. But I have looked at their roster of warlocks, and just browsing through them, I feel like they have a lot of underrated gems in there that, like, people are sleeping on. Like, a lot of stuff that they do is just very unique and very powerful in ways that maybe it doesn't line up exactly with the meta right now, but still seems very interesting. And could have some really sweet things.
I mean, even outside of the warlock side, you have ambushing bears. It's immediately going to be good because just how good ambush is in this packet. And a small scoring unit, even more valuable.
Yeah.
Bears absolutely are better than turtles.
They also have the war wagon, which is basically the Winter Guard gun carriage. And I mean, that's a win in my book automatic. So
I just bought a Hoochaller the other day. Nice. And it hasn't shown up yet, which is good because I don't need to see the $200 what it looks like when they've made it into a resin keg.
But so Troy has been playing the Hoochaller because he got one as a gift. Cool. And yeah, he's playing Gunbjorn too. And you're like, that's his feet. Gunbjorn's feet's pretty good. I don't know if anybody has realized that your whole army being immune to range attacks for a turn is a thing.
Gunny's is very attractive. It was very surprising how effective it's been. So what you're saying about trolls is totally true, by the way. Like, trolls are, like, playing magic and being like, nice spell, Mayu. Counterspell. And you're like, whoa, he's got counterspell. That's not exciting or different, but, like, that totally worked, and it was weird enough. Like, it wasn't like I did, like, a full, like, 8-card wombo combo to you and, like, made, like, an infinitely recurring, you know, like, whatever the hell combo. I don't know what matters. I didn't do
it. We're playing slivers into him, basically.
Yeah, well, I'm just like, Mayu, check it out. Counterspell, idiot. Like, and that's kind of like trolls. They're like, cool, this is our trick. And everybody's like, damn, that's a good trick. And you're like, yeah, it doesn't really get a lot deeper than that, but it can. I don't know, man. It's the only faction in this game right now that I look at, and every model, every theme, every caster, I'm like, maybe? I mean, I played, at that tournament, I played P. Borka. I made a list with E. Doomy and threatened to play it in the finals. That guy's bad. I was worried about there being multiple Grimkin, and I was just going to add Fury to it. And then I played Grim Angus with no practice at all. I played him one time in Champions, and I was like, this guy seems really good. Like, I should go feed on people more. And then I played Colgrim, like, anytime I was confused. I was like, I don't know what to do right now, so I guess I'll just be cold.
I did like you dropped an anchor on Iona once. That was fun.
That was very satisfying.
That was my favorite story of the weekend, actually.
I was on stream, and I one-hit that Iona player on the top of two. I felt really bad about that.
All right, next one is Krix. So I think Krix is also one of the top two factions of we got really good at because of the Oblivion changes. Like, yesterday, a friend of mine, Mike, was playing Scavris in Dark Host, and it looked like a good list. It seemed great. I'm just going to gush about Rahera for, like, 80 minutes.
Well before you get to that, character. I think Scavris has always been pretty sweet. Pretty, like, sleeper sweet.
So is Scavris with old crows with backstab, and now those crows have prey as well?
Yeah.
Mm. So good.
Because also there's no counter synergy with the Bane Knights on his Soul Taker spell. So he was like just marching Bane Knights into zones under Wrong Eye Snapjaw. And it's like, okay, if you're charging me under Starcrossed and I ignore Tough now and I have Defensive Strike as a mini feat. So this is fun. Being able to prey heavies with crows, turn them around and then drop a armor debuff on them and just shoot them off the table. Those also seem pretty sweet.
He's a really good caster, and I'd say his issue is just like he's like unsafe sometimes, and he likes to drop his focus, and he's very focused on offensive magic, like targeting specific models and trying to root. And historically, the piece trading hasn't really gone all that well. All of the lists you could play him in, or then you get into like a swarmy style list, and you're like buff like Denny one or something, right? Mm-hmm. But I actually, when I built the two lists when we were talking about this, I actually built a Scavris list as one of my options. I actually built Gorshade 2 in a Scavris list. But the whole thing that I was going to paint was the fact that you can go Ghost Fleet and like go real heavy in corporeal spam. So like with Scavris, I was going to play like his character and a couple arc nodes and then just do like double Wraith Engine, get your Hellslinger or whatever, get an Agrimony, get like the 3 Machine Wraith option, and then go full Ghost Raiders and grab your Black Banes. And then just fill in, you know, with what you want, get your Rengrave or whatever. And I think that you can really skew the off list all of a sudden, where you're like looking at their list and being like, hey, what's your name? Tom? Tom. Oh, hey, Tom. Tom, do you have magic weapons? And they're like, oh, God. And they like stare at your list and you're like, cool. What objective are you choosing? And they're like, magic weapons. And they're firing their like one shot at Rengraves who just cannot be stopped. And if you can achieve that game state, like more power to you, but now your off list is also kind of bonanza. So Black Industries is deep, 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 like way deeper than we can go into in a sitting. So I built my favorite caster in it, which is Shade 2. It's actually not my, why did I say that? That's not my favorite caster. That's like not even like my top 10 favorite caster. So I built this caster that I'm meh on, Shade 2.
Yeah.
So like, I love his feet and I've always loved his feet. I love the prospect of feeding and just taking like all the models that they just spent one or two turns killing and then being like upgrade and all your machine race turn or all your mechanithralls turn back into brute thralls. Well, now that you got the free brute thralls, your options became endless. So if you run like three squads of Brute Thralls, put one on the AD line with a commander, one from the ambush, and then deploy one so you have like a real good staggered, you know, approach. And then you take yourself a nice Deathjack with Carapace, and the Deathjack with Carapace is casting Abyssal Gates to move models into range, and you just, whatever you want, get yourself a Daragraith, get a squad of Soul Hunters because they threaten the world and can be, and you just like engage your enemy, and every time they shoot their big shots at your models or whatever, just be like, cool, you got a Brute Thrall, he'll be back, you know? Go over there, feet to the edge of your control, your models can't attack, but they can still walk your models, and just do like the craziest, deepest jam of all time, and then hold the flags with a couple of incorporeal solos like Machine Race and stuff. I don't know, man. That to me, I'm going to try it. I'll tell you that, because Black Industries can go 1,000 directions. I'm sure you guys have ideas with it.
Yeah, I mean, my ideas have been pretty basic bitch so far. Yeah, I love Herrera. With Black Industries specifically, like Terminus with Dara Wraith and Sack Pons and Madeline Corbeau, just like in the center of the table, just seems fun to me.
That's so Mark 1. You literally just started playing Mark 1 again.
I did. I literally just, like I said, it's a basic bitch list.
That's awesome.
I was like playing around with more Nebra 2 because you can do a similar thing with her where she's just like kind of in the middle of the table and she doesn't give a shit about basically anything. My main focus, because the whole reason I got into Krix, and I have more Krix models than I have Scorn models for some reason. The whole reason I got into Krix was Slaughter Fleet, and they merged Slaughter Fleet with Scourge of the Broken Coast. And even though the themes have been out for a little bit now, every time I try to build a Scourge of the Broken Coast list, I hemorrhage blood and pass out because there's just too many options. And there's too many things I want to include in a list anymore. I think Rahera is cool. I'm just going to keep gushing about Rahera because I think she does. She has a really good Kraken. Her feat in Scourge of the Broken Coast can go basically a million different ways. My personal favorite thing to do with her is to keep the Blood Priestess on her so that she has Sucker, so she's really hard to shoot. But you can also do things like when she goes up and you can run Smog Belchers. She charges in, she kills something, she pops her feet, the Smog Belchers still shoot and drop their clouds, and then she can sprint behind those clouds, which makes her super survivable, and then she can Sucker to them if she needs to. There's just so many, like, options you have with her, especially in that theme, that I think I could probably spend 6 months on that and that alone.
I love that caster. I really do.
Yeah, right here.
I'm going to probably play her in Mercs.
I can also, I've also been trying to resurrect my old Shade 1 Slaughter Fleet list in the new Scourge, because that's my favorite janky list that I took to Iron Gauntlet one time.
The basic synergy of the Bane Throw and Gang. So you've got your -4 all of a sudden, or your +4 swing, right?
Yeah, I had two great games. Like, two of my favorite games of War Machine I probably ever played was against Jake Wilstrop, the guy who won the Last Chance Qualifier at our favorite Renaissance Festival.
Her Majesty's Jousting Tournament?
Her Majesty's Jousting Tournament. She won that with Halo 3, so I played that Shade 1 list. This is Lock and Load 2018. I played the Shade 1 list against him twice, once in Iron Gauntlets and once in Mox Boarding House the Thursday before. Mm-hmm. And both of them were like really long, grindy, close games because Lamentation is a thing. And we were both making free models. It was great. So that's one of my favorite lists.
Jake's a proper cunt, for sure.
And he's a cool guy. And I had a blast playing against him. But also, like, the quality of that game that I had was fantastic. The only thing that's keeping me off, like, Krix is that I like Scorn when I play competitively. Mostly, and also like the two themes I'm least interested in are on champions rotations, and the champions rotations actually kind of dictates how excited I am for a faction at any given time.
That's a bizarre way to be.
I know, it's just like I love the champions format, but if I don't have like a pair I'm excited about in the champions format, I'm kind of like meh, and I like kick a can on the road and think contemplatively into the distance for a while, all sad and depressed.
Oh, you want to hear a hot take?
Okay, I'm ready.
Scar 1 is really good.
Is she? You want a hotter take?
Yeah.
Scar 2 is really good.
I'm all right. No, I actually not a crazy statement. probably worse the more people start to play her. I think a lot of people are excited about the changes because they felt like it gave Scar 2 a home. She does like character jacks. I'll give her that.
She does like character jacks. She also likes, and I think her Wraith engines are more unkillable than Scar 1 Wraith engines.
Stop.
Yes, I'm saying that. I'm saying that statement as a factual statement.
We'll agree to disagree on that one. But...
I don't know. I think 5 defense is and being unchargeable is probably a bit more survivable than 5 armor.
Well, okay. Yes, if you're saying the no chargeable thing and the fact that they're generally in range. They're generally in melee range. Like, I don't feel like I would want to Scarfeet a Wraith engine and then not have it go far up. Obviously, the game dictates a lot of different things. But if it's infantry, sure. I'll just go up there and be like, cool, guys, do you just come over here and miss me? Or do you want to, like, reposition or run through me or what? But, I mean, if a Warjack with any old wild aggression or whatever the hell you know, you got to buff them, it's just going to come over there and tear that thing apart. So your ability to, like, advance into is wrong. Whereas, like, Scar Wraith Engine Derek Wraith defeated is just plus 7 armor against living, and it's just going to stand there. And
I mean,
it's fine if you kill one, because I'm going to counter that other one. And unfortunately, yes, you did gain Curse of Shadows from young Denegra, but, you know, your BGRs only hit so hard. They're not going to be Destructotron like they are with my girl.
It's crazy to think that, like... Black Industries has a non-caster focused 6 armor swing if you wanted it.
Correct.
Which is hilarious to me.
Yes. Well, that's what opens casters like Morten Eber 1 up. The fact that I can now apply just, let's say, 4, negative 4 armor through Dark Shroud use and through Young Lady, and all of a sudden I'm like negative 4-ing me. I can now supply a caster who can make just crazy threat ranges, you know? 20-inch stalkers or whatever the hell you want. And now I can go make them POW 16 and be respectable and actually hurt things, you know? That's deep. And that makes so many things playable. She's a really cool add to that list, little Dinny.
She's also added to Scourge of the Broken Coast as well. Fun fact. Yeah, she's a living model, so she's added to that list.
Very dope.
And Warwood Sirens were added to that list as well in Scourge of the Broken Coast. Like I said, my brain melts because of options.
All this just makes me sad.
No, we're not talking about Retribution.
Mm.
We're moving on.
We're talking about your faction Infernals that you play. You play Infernals.
That's true.
Like, Morty 1's a good Infernal caster, I guess.
I mean, I don't think you can... Fiora. Any Fiora.
Gaston.
Gaston just murders everything.
My Double Hearts of Darkness is coming to a GigaCon near you.
That reminds me, I need to order my structure.
Okay, can I tell you my order that I made earlier? Here we go.
Tell us, Brandon.
Okay, here we go. I got the pygmy scout that's holding the pig. I got 2 pig arms in case one of the pig arms is miscast. I can't risk that. I got seven Bartolo hats at $1.50 each. I got 5 winter... What's the Grey Lord that's in Manowar armor?
Forge Seer, yeah.
For some reason, they sell his hat. I'm pretty sure it's his hat. But anyway, the Kador hat.
Yeah.
The furry hat with the Kador symbol on it.
Uh-huh.
I got like 5 of those. I got one of each pygmy bushwhacker model. And I'm going to build like a crazy party on top of my Sea King boat where they all have like spy glasses and stuff and pirate hats. And then I'm going to put Kador hats on my models.
I love it.
Yeah, it was like $170. The stupid structures.
Hey, Rion, if you need to borrow my Crick stuff, you just let me know.
No, I'm borrowing Menoth because that faction's so freaking good.
Yeah, evidently just having Judicators as your off list is okay still.
Whatever. You know what other faction's good?
What?
Kador.
Yes, Kador.
It's true.
So Dan, you're our Kador expert. You are the most good Kador player that we know.
There's a lot of words in that statement.
This is my Risk 2 list.
So, I think Kador has been steadily getting better as a faction pretty much since the Armored Core update. The Armored Core CID was pretty depressing because the Primal Terrors one came out right after. Turns out Manowars aren't as good as Chosen. But it since then we've gotten a lot of different small things like the adjunct and the Sorsha Zero, who has Boundless Charge, if you didn't know by now. And
you mean the adjunct that was like the single biggest faction defining piece added to your the army.
You know what's weird is I play the Silas every single game.
I think there's certainly some lists that where Silas is still worthwhile, but the adjunct just like makes it easier in a lot of other lists.
If you're a caster that misses an offensive spell and loses the game, like Sorsha One, you have to play Silas.
Absolutely. But anyway, go ahead. Absolutely. But like, you know, if you have a Victor in the list, like the adjunct has guidance, and that works out well for scoring. So, well, it's not inaccurate for one thing.
Oh.
Well,
that's
but,
a good start.
Yeah. So that happened in the Manowar theme. That's when the Victor kind of just went over the top. And then we had the whole cornucopia thing with all the Doom Reavers and shit. And now, finally, I think that this Oblivion update has kind of pushed a lot of... I think Kidor has a lot of combined arms casters where you want like a healthy-sized battle group and a decent size, a decent number of infantry as well. And the big winners of this, besides the already good casters that just got better, are combined arms casters, where you can now just take that good-sized battle group and a good chunk of troops and not be punished with it by losing out on free cards. So, for example, a list that I was toying around with before the Oblivion update and before I stopped playing Kador to play Retribution was... a Sorsha 3 list with a bunch of Ragers and Beast 09 and some pretty bog standard armored core stuff like tankers and shock troopers and Drakens to get that flank. And I think a lot of people don't realize quite how good the Rager is. I get that for 1 point more it can seem a little overshadowed by the Marauder.
Yeah.
But the Rager has 3 base attacks and shield guard. And in this list with Sorsha, it is outputting those attacks, and you can stoke the flames on it to give it counter charge, and it becomes like this really flexible jack that kind of punches above its weight class a little bit when you activate the flank on it.
Flank applies to point blank, right?
It does, because point blank is
a melee attack. So you've got two POW 15s and a POW 13 all flanking with mat 6 base, so mat 8.
That's correct.
All right, that's good. Continue.
Yeah. And then occasionally, like, you don't, in this list, you don't, because it has 3 base attacks, you don't really ever need to give it extra focus. But when you do, occasionally it just explodes, and sometimes that's good. And so, yeah, you just got these Ragers that kind of project these countercharge threats thanks to Stoke the Flames, and countercharge is one of those rules where it's really only good when you have a lot of it, because if you just have one countercharge thing, it's pretty easy to play around. So in this list, you can, you know, stack all these jacks with countercharge on top of Drakens, and then you bring along, you know, a chariot to provide a little bit of range punch. I think the siege chariot is kind of neat with Sorsha, because you can use it to extend the cloud wall from your feet a little bit if you're using that. And also, it's just got a power 20 slam gun. And Sorsha can kind of set that up with her stationary spell. And so I think this sort of list, like in Kador, you can still kind of do the bog standard Vladimir 2 in Wolves of Winter or Vlad 1 rockets. And all that's probably still fine. But the Oblivion update has opened up a lot of avenues for the faction as well. I could talk a lot about Jaws of the Wolf or Warriors of the Old Faith, because there's plenty of options in those themes too that are super interesting, and I don't even know if they're good yet. We talked about Judicators in your off list just being pretty sweet, and that's what Warriors of the Old Faith lets you do. So not a lot to complain about there.
I did see Resnik 2 Warriors of the Old Faith played yesterday. Which was
how did funny. That go for Troy?
He won because Winter Guard gun carriages are good models.
I think I love the Winter Guard gun carriage.
it's a good model with the Judicator.
That is a pet model of mine, and the better it gets, the more I like the game.
You're also one of the few people who are just playing like the Kyazis fam with the Rust 2 and Jaws.
I think, I mean, that's another list that just got kind of a little bit better. I don't know. So that was, like, conceived of as a possibility into something like Primal Terrors when I was struggling to deal with that. And I don't know that it does that still. It's, like, still not that good into that.
Well, you have the Doom Reavers now with the no healing bubbles.
Yeah, like, so Doom Reavers are kind of the go-to in that case. But I think the Chaozzi spam might still have some game, and I think Eros 2 is a great caster if you come from dying.
I also like a Butcher with Morrowind Archon. That is hilarious to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's like...
Dope.
There's a lot of shit, like, happening in Kador now.
So, here's a fun reaction.
I'm in the Darkness is sweet. Zirkova 1 is sweet. I like Zirkova 1 a lot, and I think that she is an interesting...
Zirkova 1 in Flames of the Darkness presents a very interesting question to your opponent, which is, can you beat my army without targeting me spells and without having guns, for the most part? Some guns will get around. Like, I wouldn't drop it in Sloan. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, Iona, for example, she has, like, 3 guns in her list, and those guns ain't shooting. And there's better examples, but you know what I mean? So you're asking your opponent, can you beat my models? And I'm going to probably win a weight of my an army count fight because I have Vengeance. And Vengeance generates better attacks while spreading your army. So, like, anytime you're fighting a unit with Vengeance, if you're trying to win by weight of numbers. So, like, Zirkova 1 creates a pretty interesting question. Like, can you kill my heavy, my multiple units, my caster, my... solos, like all these things that can't be targeted by without guns, and do you want to come over here and grind with me? And I mean, it might not be like the same thing on, but I think on the table it's going to be pretty effective. And yeah, you have access to Centurions if you really want an arc node. I don't know that you need it, but you can get yourself a what's his name, Lancer, Hurricane.
Lancer, yeah. Hurricane.
Yeah. Hurricane
Watcher seems fun.
Yeah,
it could be.
There was a cute interaction I'd noticed today when I was reading into Zirkova list was the last update of the CID for the Thamrite Archon gives rerolls to Thamrite models.
Yes.
And both Zirkovas picked up the Thamrite keyword.
Yeah, Gastone too also, yeah. That was cool.
So, like, there was, like, a part of me was, like, looking at just sticking a Thamrite Archon in Wolves of Winter with Zirkova too. So, like, she has that crit stationary spell. And yeah, she can get, like, Silas with a reroll. Seems okay. Seems.
I mean, if you're really focused on crit stationing, I guess you could play Zirkova 2.
Yeah.
But that's still fine. I'm still fine with what you're saying. And well, then reroll it with her, because she never fails.
She never fails.
Yeah, ever. That's
So Zirkova 2 is one of my favorite casters that I don't know quite how to make work. I mean, there's only one way to really try and play her. But I'm going to. I'm going to do that.
I know how you play her. I can tell you right now.
Yeah, I know too.
As of like a couple days ago, they released Tauntaun Scout Riders to Star Wars Legion. They're 2 in a box. You buy 3 boxes of Tauntaun Scouts. You mount your Grey Lord Outriders on those Tauntauns. And do you guys need more? I don't.
No, that's good. Thank you.
Seems like enough to me.
Yeah.
The caster I played the most, because I had a very large Kador collection one time in my life, and I played in Mark III. The caster I actually played the most was Zirkova 2. It was like my pet project of like, this has to work. This has to work somehow.
When she got released, I was excited about her too. I don't know. You know who I'm really excited about though?
Who?
My girl, Old Witch. So everything that I like about Kador basically has to come with the fact that Cossacks always have. I've always sworn they're good. Now everybody knows Ambush is good. So nobody can even tell you they're not anymore. Cossite Woodsman went down a point. The 6-point unit, 1 point per model, is very strong. I don't care what anybody says. Absolutely. So I've got this sweet... I love Jaws, okay? Pathfinder on Jax is good. Nobody's going to disagree with you there. Especially your Kador Jax, because they're all yippy, skippy, slow as hell. And then you've got that Forest. And you guys know that I played a ton of Kraze Mark II theme, where he had the Forest that he put into play. It when you have a reliable piece of terrain, let's just say, remember when Sloan was in the meta? When we went to WTC, I told my team, I will beat Sloan if you give me a Forest or a house on my table where I can hide. Like, I'll take second if I have to, and I will hide behind it. And that was it. That was my Sloan plan. If you guys give me a place to hide, now I brought it. You know what I mean? So I've got this sweet old one witch list. Old witch one list. I've been drinking bourbon. So I call it Old Witch One Ocean's 8. All right. So Old Witch One is basically Sandra Bullock. So she's Debbie Ocean. She's pretty hot. And she's got a behemoth. All right. Because one of my favorite Kator players, one of the best Kator players I've ever met, told me the behemoth. I think he's wrong, but I'm still going to play the behemoth here. And then coming up as the supporting cast, I have Anne Hathaway, a.k.a. Zero Sorsha. That's Daphne Kluger. All right. You remember Ocean's 8, right? We all watched that? Good.
We all watched that movie.
Good. It was part of the homework for this episode that you guys watched it. All right? So then she's got a Marauder, and then you go Malakov, all right? And I know you all know who Malakov Zero is. That's Rihanna. Yeah. All right, okay. Cool. Okay. And then you've got yourself a Sorsha Zero, and she's coming in hot. That's Cate Blanchett on the horse. So all four of those models, obviously your caster is an important model, but all four of those models are important. And Sorsha, Old Witch 1, is capable of protecting small groups of models. She's not a traditional cloud wall where you're like, my whole army's behind this cloud wall. But when you already have a forest on the table and you can start to create terrain how you want it, you can actually make a real cloud wall with the Murder of Crows. So now you've got Old Witch hiding wherever she wants to, Little Sorsha hiding wherever she wants to, Malakov hiding wherever she wants to, Alexia, Mistress of the Witchfire, or should I say, obviously, Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway. And if you guys really want, we've got Yuri the Axe, and that would probably be like Sarah Paulson, right? So to me, I like the list. I think you can protect important pieces like your Alexia, and you can create a game out of it. I mean, like, I'll play it and see what it does. But all that it comes down to is I feel like the lists are all opened up because Wolf adding that forest to the game. And here's my bonus round for Ryan McDermott. He's got Sorsha 1, lied to you already. He's got Strakov 1 with a Victor because the Victor has the rapid fire in the maintenance phase. And by the way, Victors aren't inaccurate, Daniel, just because earlier you said that. I'm going to correct you. Thanks. So you're firing your Victor twice a turn, which means you've got two Victors on the table. And then you put like Torch in his battle group and he threatens like, I don't know, 20. Let's look at it here. 4, 6, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. There you go. Your Torch threatens 22 because you also have a zero. And she has a Beast 09 and he threatens like 15. So he hits the front line. Torch hits the back line. Victor fires twice a turn. Bring yourself some damn Manhunters. Take some free Eliminators. Let's move on with our lives. Kator's good.
The only thing I want to say about Old Witch 2, or Old Witch 1, I mean, my favorite rule on her card is Apparition under Jax.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can just like put them behind forests and be like, I'm charging you next turn. This is the best protection I can think of for a Kator Jack in the game. A speed buff like that lets you ignite.
You're a slave to the terrain, but all I know about Sandra Bullock is she gets out of every situation.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, she got off that cruise ship.
She can get off that cruise ship in her sleep.
That's true. Remember when she was in space? Was that Sandra Bullock?
Well, the movie where space is awful? That's Sandra Bullock.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Gotcha. Just checking.
But I think Jaws of the Wolf is your biggest change, right?
I'd say so. I'd say, aside from, like, the brand new themes, Jaws of the Wolf is, like, the freshest shit on the block.
It's pretty hot.
Yeah, until we're all playing Hurricanes on Zarkova 1 in Flames of the Darkness.
I'm telling you, there's a question to be asked when you can't do anything.
I mean,
play with your other weapons. Like, when you just walk across the table and we're like, hit each other with sword. Like, I don't know. It's a game.
I definitely am in the market for a hurricane, and I'll just. I think we can wrap it up on that note.
All right. Thank you for listening to Enter the Crucible Reborn. Our current goal is to be about a monthly podcast. If this is the only episode that we ever post, things happened. But besides that, I've been Matthew.
This was Dan.
Tell us your name, Ron. You weren't here.
I was waiting for you to go. Because I'm a very polite person like that.
I always go last.
Ah, well. All right, then. This is Rion.
Tell us your last name, because we butchered it earlier.
Maybe you guys are the ones who are pronouncing it right at this point, and maybe I'm the one who doesn't know how to pronounce my name anymore. So we'll go with Reen Canoopy.
Oh, Reen Canoopy. And this is Brandon Andrews, and this podcast was brought to you by Blade and Bow Bourbon, inspired by the historic Stetzel Weller Distillery, established 1935 in Louisville, Kentucky. Renowned home of the world's finest bourbons. Drink
legally. I would say you should not be doing that.
Just they can cut it.
I'm not editing this, and I kind of wanted to know about that bourbon recommendation.
Rip Snooty.
Rip Snooty.
That is Snooty. The real thing that matters.
R.I.P. Snooty. Good night, folks.